This morning we'll read and comment on a koan from the Heikkei Enroku. It's number 18. It's called the National Teacher's Seamless Monument. It is about this National Teacher. National Teacher was an honorific title that was given to an outstanding Zen master during the Han Dynasty, the Tang Dynasty. And this particular one was National Teacher Chu. He sometimes referred to in the literature as Chu Kokshi, Kokshi meaning National Teacher. He was a disciple of Wei Nong, the sixth patriarch, and he lived for 100 years from 675 to 775, and had many disciples. So this is how the koan reads. It's rather long. Emperor Dai So asked the national teacher, Chu, parenthesis here by my teacher says he was on his deathbed. Other translations do not include that, but this was probably a clarification that my teacher put in. And so then the emperor asked the national teacher, after 100 years, again, another clarification when you are no longer with us, what will you need? And another translation says, what can I do for you? I rather like that one better because I'm sure the national teacher, Chu, was far beyond needing anything. So, with all that, after 100 years, what can I do for you? Says the emperor. Now, the emperor in those days is a wonderful thing. The emperor was a student of this Zen master. And a number of the emperors in China were like that. And likewise, when Zen came to Japan, the members of the ruling class were often students. They even put up with pretty harsh treatment, slaps and kicks and all the rest of it. So it really tells us a lot about the way in which Zen was honored and esteemed in those days. And so here the emperor asks the national teacher what he can do for him after 100 years or 100 years after your death and so on. So the national teacher says, build a seamless monument for this old monk. The emperor said, please tell me, master, what the monument should look like. The national teacher was silent for a long time. And then he said, do you understand? No, I do not, said the emperor. So the national teacher said, I have a disciple to whom I have transmitted the teaching, Tangen by name, who is well versed in this matter. Please summon him and ask him about it. After the national teacher passed on, the emperor summoned Tangen and asked him about it. And Tangen gave a verse. South of Shou and north of Tang, Secho is one of the contributors to the Heikkei Enroku, makes the comment and says, this soundless sound of one hand. Next line in Tangen's verse was, in between there is gold sufficient to a nation. And Secho comments, a rough-hewn staff. And the next line in Tangen's verse, beneath the shadowless tree, a community ferry boat. Secho adds, clears the river, calm is the sea. And finally, the last line in Tangen's verse, no holy person in the emerald palace you see. And Secho comments, all is finished. Now, many people find this koan a puzzler. They wonder why it's included in the collection. Though they may admire the verse of Tongen, but we have to realize that National Teacher was obviously very sincere about his the function that he had in the world, and knew that the emperor would have a lot of influence, and so this interchange went on. The emperor might have been concerned, on the other hand, with, as I presume emperors are, concerned with legacy and something that marks their passage once they depart from the scene. A great monument, and all over Europe and other countries we see all kinds of monuments to past emperors and other noteworthies. Something to remind people of the existence of this person, what they contributed, and how many people they slaughtered, or whatever it is. So here the emperor is asking National Teacher Chu, what can I do for you? And the National Teacher says, build a seamless monument for this old monk. Now Chu was concerned with this idea of seamless. I'd like us to look into this idea of seamless. In fact, the whole koan is about seamless. Chu once was asked by a monk something like, what is the Dharmakaya? And he said, tiles, stones, walls. And the monk asked, do these know about teaching? And Chu said, they teach without interruption. Now, this is an important point. I often mention to folks about the trees and the grass and the clouds and the stones on the road, that these are Bodhisattvas, in a manner of speaking, in the sense that they manifest forth for our benefit. Not with the intention of benefit, but if we are receptive, that's how they function for us. To reveal the Dharma. Now, they don't reveal the Dharma by the chemical composition of their rocks, nor their the botanical facts of their life, if they are trees or grass, nor the meteorological facts if they are clouds. It's not about that. It's about what they are, their being. What do we need in order to perceive that? For teaching is useless if it's in a foreign language that we can't understand. How do we make it so that we can understand this teaching? And we say understand, but of course it is not to put it into some kind of context that it makes sense. This is useless. This is separating ourselves from it. This is like speaking of a person and listing some of their preferences and traits and aspects of their history. If you're a friend, if you're an intimate of this person, there's a whole other way of knowing and relating to them and being with them when you are there. So it's a matter of how to be with without anything in between. That is seamlessness. Seamlessness. No fixed interface. How do you do that? In Koan 23 of the Mumon Khan, about the monk Myo pursuing the patriarch Wei Nung, the title is, and indeed it comes from a thing that the patriarch said to the monk Myo, he said, think neither good nor evil. Mumon, at one point in his one of his verses in the Mumon Khan, says, those who live by right and wrong are impaled by right and wrong. And what is a seamless state for us to be in, from which we can perceive, hear, respond to the teaching of everything in the world, seamlessly? The stones, the rocks, they teach without end. The sound of the river, the raindrops on the roof. It is about this division, about this right and wrong, good and evil, every aspect of this division, and divisions within. The one that you think you are and the one that you desire you were in order to be seamless. Everything like that. So, part of our Zen practice is to identify, to note, not to discuss, but to observe the rearing of its head of these divisions that come in the form of judgments, come in the form of identifications. Most people would consider things like a rotten log or a few stones in the driveway as being something to, at best, have some functionality. For one, or irrelevancy. Rarely would they be looked at, really be with, the way they would be with, perhaps, a valued friend or a child. And even there, if you cannot really be with the stones, the grass, the fallen tree, I believe that you cannot really be with your lover, with your child, with your close friend. For this has to be, as I was alluding to the other day, to have respect for everything, to be present with everything, the opening of a door, the placement of your shoes, so on, to be present. So a lot of this aspect of Zazen is to learn how to be present, that is to say, to be seamless, that is to say, to be non-divided, that is to say, to let go of identifications with self, with a position, a reference point from which criticism and conclusions come. So the national teacher says, build me a seamless monument. Now the emperor was thinking about legacy. And so, in a manner of speaking, was the great teacher Chu thinking about legacy. How to continue this teaching so that people live seamlessly and come out of the capsule, the chrysalis, the encasement, the prison, built for one's comfort, but becoming a prison that separates us from everything. So that all we have left is ideas, opinions. All the great Zen masters have tried to point, tried to urge, tried to nudge individuals beyond this position of holding to positions. This isn't, it's not to say that positions are wrong. They have a use, of course, in many karmic situations. You have to evaluate and so on. What we're talking about here is the addiction to holding to them and concluding that they are reality in the sense of substantiality. We've arrived at knowing, and this is all false. They're all stories, every one of them. This matter of becoming seamless is a matter of opening oneself to knowing beyond all the stories. It's an essential part of our Zen training to really learn that all these things that populate the mind, that offer themselves as reality, are all of them, without exception, stories. To really get that, that what we are aiming at in the practice of Zen is to let those things be in order that the mind be cleared and a space be made available for the entry of what is already offering itself everywhere. Stones and trees and our best friend, the floor and the carpet, and our very breathing. How can that be made a teaching for us? Something that we can become or enter into, or whatever word would be appropriate here. So this matter of becoming seamless. So the emperor asks, you tell me what style or what would the monument look like? And the national teacher, in direct response to what the emperor asked, not evading the question, not doing some standard thing like sitting in zazen, but sitting silently for a long time, is the emperor going to understand what this means in terms of emptiness, in terms of seamlessness? So finally, Chu asks the emperor, do you understand? And the emperor says, no, I do not. So the national teacher tells him about Tangyan. Probably because Tangyan was going to carry on his formal teaching, probably be the head of his monastery and so on. And so after the death of the national teacher Chu, Tangyan is summoned by the emperor and asked about the style of the monument. What's all this about? I want to do a good thing for this great teacher that we've both had. Can you help me out with about the style of the monument? The teacher called it a seamless monument. Can you help me out to understand this? And Tangyan says, south of Sho and north of Tan. Now these were two I'll do the two lines. South of Sho and north of Tan, in between there is gold sufficient to a nation. Now Sho and Tan were two rivers which roughly delineated the space in the China of the time where this wonderful thing Zen was flourishing. After all, it's the early part of the Tang Dynasty, the great golden age of Zen. And for some reason, I guess scholars may have figured it out, but for some reason, there was a great hunger growing and a great thronging of people to places and teachers where the authenticity was being offered. They wanted the truth, the bottom line. They wanted to really know what this matter is. Maybe it was because all these long times that Buddhism had been in China and had become something that people were trying to find the marrow in it. It was about sutras and about rituals and about temples and about fancy clothes and dress and hierarchies. Maybe that was enough. Maybe that was enough. Maybe it's something like the years of George Bush creating a hunger for something that is real, is genuine, is something that really helps people. That created partly the enthusiasm for our current president, Obama. I don't know. At any rate, this is what is meant by between Sho and Tan. In the area, in this area in China where Zen is flourishing and starting to come into being as a prime and central aspect of the transmission of Buddhism. Finally, the core emerges. Finally, Bodhidharma, the seed that Bodhidharma sowed, is taking fruit. taking root and bearing fruit. And Tangen says, there is gold. Here, there is gold sufficient to a nation. Now, this was not merely the gold of the teaching of Zen. This meant that right where you stand, right here, is gold, is richness. In what? In the commonplace? When he was alive, Chu was asked by another monk something about Dharmakaya. He said to the monk, bring me the water bottle. The monk went and brought the water bottle. Then Chu said, now put it back where you got it. An ordinary act, maybe an act that would invite a comment about what was all that about. Why did you ask me for the bottle if you just weren't going to ask me to put it back again? Did you, in your dotage, did you forget? Did you want a drink of water and then forgot you wanted a drink? What's all this about? This is what we do when we comment on content. Rather than have the trust that something's going on here, what is it? As I said to one of you in Doksan recently, when asking about what I talked about last night, about the carrying on of the two things at the same time in your being. The one is the presence with your mu or your hu, and the other one is the real presence with the individual entities that you are encountering second to second. The door, the floor, the glass of water, whatever it may be. And it was a very wonderful question, because what you do is, the image I used was, it's like being near the ocean. You hear the ocean on the other side of the dune, maybe, and it's just that, but you haven't yet seen it or stepped into it, but you hear it. It is like that with mu or hu. As you practice in the world, there is this going on. It's like a deep sound, a deep presence within you that is reminding you that something is going on, something is available to you, but what is it? And you may remember, it is in the door handle, it is in the stone, it is in the fallen log, it is in the cloud, it is in this glass of water, but what is it? And underneath is this reminder. Nobody hears it, but you know it. As a result of long practice that puts it in there as a permanent possession, you know that there is this stretching. What is it? What is it? But not worded like that. Not so many words. Not words that interfere with the contact with the door handle and the glass of water and the floor. No. But it is in there, reminding you this world is not just content to be made reports about. It is not things to worry about and acquire. It is not simply an arena for judgment and so on. It is there's something else there, something else revealed everywhere in the stones, the fallen log, the glass of water. What is it? Hopefully the monk to whom Chu asked to bring the water bottle has something like that going on, and realized that in the very ordinariness, of getting a water bottle and putting it back, very ordinariness of the stones in the road, there's something. What is it? And if you are quiet enough inside, if you have let go of being National Enquirer addicted to the tales and gossips about all the things in the world, but you notice them. You notice them. It happens in the world. It goes on. But underneath is this, what is underneath? What is this really all about? what's it all about? You're listening for, if we might malign it by calling it, it. What is it? What is it? What is this Dharmakaya? What is this fundamental nature? What is this Buddha body? What is it? Beyond all words, beyond all ideas. What's going on underneath, reminding you of this inquiry, this stretching, this commitment of your life to this process of awakening in the presence of everything that is offered to you during a day. This makes life very enlivening, very exhilarating, very fruitful, very never the same, always new. So, Dongen says there's gold here, sufficient for a nation. And there's gold that is in every single thing. This world is enormously rich in teaching, constantly. We are surrounded by this bodhisattva quality of our world. Listen, listen, see, see, hear. One of the masters was asked by a student at one time, how do I enter into the Dharma? The master said, do you hear that river over there? The student said, yes. He said, enter there. Tangen goes on, and he says, beneath the shadowless tree, a community ferry boat. Now these folks in those days, apparently, if the Zen literature is any indication, were very reluctant to say things straight on directly. Probably because in order truly to communicate, truly to get it, truly to come to this place of knowing, you have to participate. It cannot be given to you. No matter how exalted and true the teaching is, it cannot be given unless you participate. So this somewhat indirect way of speaking was an invitation, indeed a necessity, to participate. What is this shadowless tree? Now, the community ferry boat is a common image in Buddhism, of course. The ferry boat carrying people from the sufferings of samsara to the release of nirvana across the river of some sort. And it's community, it's open to everybody. So that's not so mysterious, but it's beneath a shadowless tree, as though this is how you find it. As though, if you want that ferry boat, if you want to be released from samsara, the directive is, go find the shadowless tree. You'll find it parked there. What is a shadowless tree? What is this saying with some benevolent indirection? Shadowless means it's undivided. There's no second thing. There's not a shadow. It's also, in a matter of speaking, invisible in a strange way. That's what would have no shadow, right? Something that's not there. Not there is a particularity. But because because it's not there as a particularity, it is really there. When we're talking about this seamless monument, the teacher Chu is not talking about some structure of stone, some pagoda built of costly materials, meant to last forever to remind people of the existence of this individual Chu. No, this is of irrelevancy. It's too much of that in the world. Maybe some of you have visited places that are memorializing some individual. I think myself right at this moment of Lourdes in France. You go to Lourdes, the great place where that woman, whose name I've forgotten for a moment, had some vision of the Virgin Mary and so on. There's a great cathedral there. It's kind of starting to get a bit tacky now. It's falling apart a bit. I was there a few years ago. But anyhow, and people go there. Why? Why? And they go into the cave called the Grotto, where she apparently had her vision, and they're searching for something. Maybe it'll appear to me, and if it appears to me, maybe it'll transform me, or maybe if I'm of a good imagination, I don't know why they go there. But they go there, and it's a thriving business for the town. There's a lot of those things in the world. Not even, I think, as beneficial to the world as I remember near Prague going to see the home of Dvorak. To me, that was very inspiring, to see where he wrote his music and to see the chair and to look out the window that he must have looked out and seen those trees and so on, and somehow it helped one to kind of grok the music more. But a monument built to someone who did something that you're hoping to get some kind of emanation from. And it's so touching because people come in wheelchairs and with crutches and so on and so on in order to, but the deep hope is so, so touching. The deep hope that something will happen for them, that will benefit them in some way. And doubtlessly, the mind being as strong as it is and as influential on its counterpart called the body, that no doubt sometimes things do happen of a benevolent nature. But probably more times something does not happen, and then people leave with maybe a greater sense of despair or sense that they're not doing it right, or maybe they came on the wrong day or something. So, at any rate, here's this shadowless tree. Something that is a good image of the seamless monument. And it refers also to, I think, we individuals. You've sometimes heard me speak, I think, of the fact, in my opinion, that the true Zen monk is an invisible person. I don't mean that you can't shake hands with him or her, but I mean that there are no marks that make the person stand out specially in the world, because there's no investment in that. Obviously, the great teacher Chu had that quality. There was no investment in anybody making a big deal out of him, but to come and learn, to seek that person out and try to find, to avail themselves of teaching, quite a different thing. But this is not done by an ego individual. This is merely coming to a situation where there is a vehicle that may bear the name of this great teacher Chu, but it is a vehicle through which something comes that has life to it, and that is of benefit to the, in this case, the realm of tongue, the region between Sho and Tang, between these two rivers, this area where things are starting to perk and flourish. There's gold here. The appropriate way to continue this heritage is this shadowless tree, the invisible monk, the one of no marks. After all, read the Diamond Sutra, where the Buddha very clearly points out stuff that has been forgotten by a lot of Buddhists, that the Buddha cannot be identified by any mark. None of the, I think it's 38 qualities of the great person, none of them, including long earlobes and blue skin and all the rest of them. Silliness, silliness. People search for it. And now people search, they supermarket all over the world. They don't get it. There's gold here, not just in them, there are hills. It's here. Where is the Tang Dynasty now? Here! So, Tangen, true to his teacher, says, beneath the shadowless tree, a community ferry boat, that's where it's anchored. That's where it's anchored. Where there is nothing, that nothing that thunders forth to them as can hear the thunder. This is how to go from the shore of suffering, of duality, of division, of the dreams of self, to the other shore, to awakenness. And then he says, there is no holy person in the Emerald Palace. No holy one in the Emerald Palace. There's a wonderful saying in Zen, is this enlightenment is like a robber breaking into an empty house. There ain't no one here. This is the shadowless tree. This is the seamless monument. This is the appropriate legacy of the great teacher Chu. This is what we can learn. This is what we can find out and inquire into ourselves. This is the locus of all this. The locus is not in some foreign land. It is not in some distant town. It is not working in a place that has a famous name. It's here. Wherever you are, it's here. It's here. Here, wherever you are. For this is your home. It looks maybe different, but it's your home all the time. It's the place that is your place. The place that is your place of comfort, your place of realization, your place of solace, your place of awakening. Here. Here, wherever that here is. The world is full of gold. It's full of here. The stones, the trees, the grass. Not just beautiful flowers. How sad. People trek all over the place to visit some lotus pond just because somebody in the days of the Buddha spoke of the lotus coming up out of the mud as an image of the coming to awakening from an unlikely place. Lotuses are very beautiful flowers, no doubt about that. But there's nothing magical about Bodh Gaya or lotus flowers or famous statues or whatever it is. You may have noticed there's no Buddha on the altar this time. Why is that? Well, because the Buddha figure, I forgot it. But do we ever forget Buddha? Do we ever forget this? That goes on underneath. The product of long practice. The product of sincerity. Someone asked, I think it was Nansen, about what happens at death. And Nansen said so pointedly, how badly do you want to know? That's the thing. That's what's combined. Way underneath with this. Because you want to know. You don't want the leaves, you want the roots. What is it? What is this thing? What is the seamless life? The life that is not broken up into compartments, that is not one thing after another, but that flows the way life flows, without division. Where does morning begin? Where does night begin? Where does your youth end? When did you suddenly become your professional name? Was it on graduation day? Well, not quite. Well, these are stupidities that we people live by. We impose upon the life that has no division, that is seamless, these compartments, these convenient little things that we can talk about and congratulate ourselves about or feel badly about or whatever it is. They don't exist. We make them real, but they don't exist. They have no substance. So, we must all learn how to live seamlessly. That means to be attentive. That means to watch this old mind as it comes in and tries to divide up our life, tries to feed us with this division, that division, this thing and that thing, as though they actually had any reality outside of what we attribute to them. Just watch it. Be compassionate to it. It's kind of nice, kind of cute, what the mind does, this old mind. But don't be fooled by it. Instead, reside in this this underlying sound of the great ocean of the Dharma. Nansen again, in a famous koan, that's a famous interchange that's in the Mumon Khan as a koan, says it in a different way, but it's the same way. He said, someone asked him, is there a teaching that has not yet been taught to people? Someone doubtlessly who had supermarketed all over the Tang Dynasty and was trying to find out stuff and said, well, that's not it. That's good. It's nice, but it's not. There must be something else. What is it? They came to Nansen. Good thing. And he said, yes, there is a teaching that has not been taught to people. Oh, boy. So the monk says, what is it? And Nansen said, it is not mind. It is not Buddha. It is not a thing. We don't hear what happened to the person who asked the question. But this is another aspect of seamlessness. Mumon, in his characteristic tongue-in-cheek, says, "Old Nansen has revealed all his treasure. Opened the treasure house, just shown it all." Yes, but we spoke earlier of the receptivity that's necessary. For how many people are they sufficiently receptive to know that statement of Nansen, or to really know what is meant by the seamlessness? Again, all we have to do, you just have to observe your mind. Observe how it breaks everything up. Observe how it gets kind of stuck on some of the things it breaks up. Characteristically of us human beings, each person has their own kind of variety of Velcro. You know, fancy Velcro, commonplace Velcro, red Velcro, green Velcro, that attaches to this and that and this and that. Watch it. Just observe, observe, observe. And just witness it. Don't make any judgments on it. Don't try to push it away, but just observe. Observing is the great aqua regia, the royal solvent that dissolves all Velcro. Just witness it. You'll find it loses its power. Becomes one more of those things that just goes out the doors that you leave open and goes out the windows that you leave open. It's a wonderful thing. This is because it's natural to us. Our house of ego will naturally fall apart if you don't keep replacing the mortar. The bricks will naturally fall apart and the house will drop. And what was separated from us by this house that we built for our own comfort and because of custom will be revealed, because it's always there, waiting outside the walls of our particularizing, of our separation. Are the stones, the fallen trees, the grass, the birds, the clouds, every bodhisattva quality in all these beings is just waiting. It's just there. They have no agenda. Of course not. Because to the bodhisattva, there is nothing but Buddha. What agenda would there be? To get you to be other than Buddha? What a mystery it is to be a human being, participating in this particularizing, divided world, and yet drawn by this hunger to know seamlessness. So, it is not a monument that we want to build. It is a life that we want to realize. This life is seamless. It's truly seamless. You don't have to work at making it seamless. It's truly seamless. You just have to notice the seams and notice they have no substance and notice that they will unravel if you just witness them with kindness, without grasping, without aggression, not manifesting any of the three poisons, no aggression, no fighting them, no wanting something different, and no going into oblivion. Just not my lifetime, man. I won't be able to realize that. I think I just go to sleep and enjoy a nice glass of beer and be comfortable. No, it's not oblivion. He isn't going to do it either. That's why they call them the three poisons. The three poisons all derive from one source, and that is fundamental ignorance. Fundamentally not realizing what's so. That's all. Just not realizing what's really so. The practice of Zen is cultivating the skillful means so you get to realize what's really so. What's really so, if we want to put any word on it, is seamless. But be careful. That'll draw forth an image for you as sure as anything else. You just let it be. Just forget it. Just do it. Let's all be good disciples of Nansen, the great teacher Chu. And then there's a